Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. This is the Voice of Vachon Brown Briefly podcast, and that was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. We are radiating from the Beehive of Cultural Awareness, known formerly as the Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio, in the bustling and bodacious heart of our pastoral Vachon Island community. And I said it without getting too tripped up on that one.
That's a very good, nice.
Together we, the Brieflys, aspire to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events, laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less, and we always aim to deliver more. Let me introduce the Brieflys and our guest. Engineering the show from behind the big red button here in the JBBS is our intrepid retired Alaska Airline captain, Vachon Airport Commissioner, and my fellow treetop flyer, Truman O'Brien.
And hello, hello, hello. I am here.
Good. I'm glad. Otherwise, nobody could hear us.
They won't hear a thing, will they?
Also present in the studio is part-time political fairy fixer, executive director of Vachon Household, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer.
Good morning.
Good morning, Amy. Then we have rower, backpacker, and how many more months is this administration going to be around, inquirer, Kevin Jones?
That's me. How many times can I say too many months? I know it's, yeah.
Well, that okay. kind of answers the question, doesn't it?
It does.
Joining us today is Island Luminary and my good friend Martin Koenig, who will share some of the experiences and insights he's gained during his remarkable career as a teacher, historian, dancer, producer, and perhaps most importantly, archiver of a vanishing culture, the people, music, and dances of rural Balkan Europe. Now, that introduction covered a lot of territory, and I may have misspoke, but if I did a little bit, Martin, that's okay. Hopefully I over-advertised rather than under-advertised. Good to have you here.
It was fine.
Okay. And I'm a former constitutional law professor and guardian of Pan American's first 747, Craig Bellis. As per our usual practice, let's take a moment to check in with everyone about what good things you experienced this past week. And we'll start out with Amy.
Hello. Well, last week before, I was gone last week at the Community Land Trust Conference, the Pacific Northwest Community Land Trust Conference in Missoula, getting together with all the other home ownership, affordable home ownership rabble rousers, and was inspired because the PNWCLT coalition, as they're shortened known, started right here on Vachon, right here at Jean Bosch herself, got it all together and brought folks from the San Juans and across Washington here to talk about what was then in the early 90s, the brand new idea. Quote unquote, it wasn't brand new, but idea of the community land trust and how we might bring that here. And that has blossomed into a whole regional network. We had folks from Alaska, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Hawaii.
Wow.
There talking about land trust. Very inspiring. A lot of good connections, a lot of good technical information. So that was really cool. And then, of course, I was on the first Saturday sailing in the 21st century of the Vachon Water Taxi, headed over 10:30 in the morning and had a wonderful day in Seattle with Aaron, saw a show, got some brunch, had a great time, and then came back on the 6:30. So wow. Here's to Saturday Water Taxi.
Were there some luminaries on the water? I know when the first thing started was like luminaries. So.
Yeah, no, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. So okay. No luminaries, but they did send their media. They did send their social media person and did some social media hoopla about the Saturday sailing. And there was an appreciable number of people on that 10:30 sailing and on the 6:30 sailing back. Not sure about the infill, but talking with the crew, they said there were more folks than they even anticipated for the sailing. So head on down.
You obviously were the designated luminary on
that. Yes, that's right. I was like, hello, I just woke up, but here I am.
And I have to thank you for the work you do with the land trusts. That's fabulous work. The land trusts, of course, have been around, like you say, for a while, but they really started going there in the early 90s.
Yeah,
And I'm proud to say I was on Vashon's first land trust board of directors.
Right on. Mm-hmm. And we do have, you know, we have the, and I am new to this, so I'm learning all about it. And, we are very much ahead of the times with where we were with community land trusts back in the day. And hoping now we're figuring out how to work right. People are trying to pioneer how to work with the Conservation Land Trust and, you know, the Housing Trust to sort of, you know, say, hey, how can we make this go hand in hand? How can we preserve, what we have and still house our neighbors?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Just a clarification. The original land trust was Emma Amiad even before Gene so, got involved with, but this is the community.
It's a different.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So there's, yeah.
And, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. There's the Conservation Land Trust, right? Which is what we think of as the quote unquote land trust.
Correct.
And then
the community land trust has to do with the.
Yes. The Vashon homes. Housing.
Yeah. Okay. Now
household
clear.
is the housing land
okay,
trust.
I'm
yeah.
Now.
And that's, you know, we talked about that community confusion at,
at the
conference about, you know, how inconvenient it is that they share names, especially when, you know, there's such a juggernaut on Vashon that sort of, sets a definition.
Right. That's good. Glad we clarified that.
Truman, what were you up to this last week?
Well, of course, I went to CHRCH Church on Sunday, which was absolutely fabulous. Rob Hoskins was leading the band, and boy, the house band was just exceptional this year, I think. I mean, I saw you there, Craig, and I just thought it was just beyond belief, so great. And of course, the players were always terrific. And also, I have a confession to make to my fellow Brieflies. We advertise ourselves as being a podcast and a live radio show, which we are. Unfortunately, the podcast part did require a very convoluted process to get us published. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I've been remiss on getting several of our podcast up and playing.
Oops.
But I recently got with our program director and figured out how to do it myself. And I've now got about 15 of them loaded. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to get caught up. So we'll get all of the important ones.
All right.
Up.
Right on.
So yeah. all
Wait,
better now.
All of the important ones.
Yeah. All of the important ones. Yeah.
So you mean all of them?
Yeah, that's basically what I mean. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm glad we clarified that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but anyway. So, it's a much simpler process now, and I promise to get them all uploaded from now on. So there we go.
All right.
That's my confession.
And what about that's it? That's all you're going to tell us about your week? You didn't have any disasters at home, things breaking down or anything like that?
Not this week.
Well, that's
amazing.
Good.
Amazing.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
Something's wrong.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Kevin, how about you?
Well, I hiked Maury with some friends the other day. We were thinking, contemplating going up to elevation, and then the weather report discouraged us. So it was like I was trying to find a route that was like below 3,000 feet that we could drive to that was going to be fun. And it was like, well, why would we do all that to go walk around in the rain? So yeah, we hiked Maury. We did the connector trail.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah, speaking of the land trust, the Conservation Land Trust.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. They have it flagged. It's not really, totally in yet, but you can go walk on it. So it was awesome. And I'm just sort of amazed. Our guide had like a mental map of all the intersections and which way to turn. And I'm thinking, wow, that's like a lot of mental map, because there's a lot of trails out there. So, but yeah, they have trails at the trailheads. So, you know, you grab one. let's see. I did some canvassing in Port Orchard again on Thursday, walking around talking to voters for the election coming up. And just to look ahead a little bit, I'd say the Saturday water taxi ain't seen nothing yet.
Oh, we did think about that.
On 18th October, this Saturday, 10:35.
Yeah, get Vashon there early, because that boat is full, and it's full.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Indivisible Vashon protest group with the drum corps, the kazoos, the vuvuzelas, and who else is going to jump in?
Are there going to be any inflatable frogs? Or
We just heard last night that the inflatable frog suit demand has gone through the roof, and they're hard to get now.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, the black market, I'm
sure. But there are inflatable orca suits available.
Okay, we don't know who all or what all is going to show up, but the point is to show up. So it's going to be the 10:35 water taxi, and as you said, get there early. I was at the sign build last night, and I talked to Bill Moyer, who's making the paper mache heads, and he's like all over the country right now. He said going to be in D.C. tomorrow, but you know, Bill's doing an awesome job getting the word out about how to raise awareness about the current situation we're in. But anyway, 10:35 water taxi, Saturday, 10:18. Just come and see the crowd, if nothing else. And then on Vashon from 1 to 3, gather at the four-way and bring your signs. And I hear there's going to be some photography going on with that.
Some potential aerial photography. Potential. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weather permitting issue. Yeah.
Which means, just so we're all clear about this, there's a hoped for flyover.
Yeah.
Of downtown Vashon.
Yeah.
And shall we name names?
Well, not ICE. It won't be Homeland Security.
It's a father and daughter team, I hear.
There you go. That's what it'll be. It'll be a professional photographer in the back and a half-assed pilot up front.
Flying out of the Vashon Airport.
Yeah, indeed.
So that'll be awesome. All kinds of things to do this Saturday for No Kings 2. So hope people will join in.
Oh, yeah. And you remind me, while we're talking politics, the next lecture on heroes.
Which is?
Political heroes is tonight. So we'll be with Dr. Hubble talking about Eleanor Roosevelt and Joseph McCarthy, which is an interesting pairing. Reminds me of some other pairings that we've had recently, diametrically opposed political pairings. So I'll be chatting with him for just a minute before he gets into that lecture and having a good convo. It's 7:00 at the Vashon High School Theater, free for all, and donations gladly accepted, I believe.
And doors open at 6:30.
Nice.
So show up, you know, and chat with folks.
And that is one of the podcasts that I did get uploaded. It's Dr. Larry Hubble. So
awesome. Two thumbs up here.
Look for it on the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
And Martin, I have a feeling I know what you were up to this last week, but in a nutshell, what good things did you do this last week?
Well, first I want to say I'll be on that boat on the 18th with my wife. Well, I've been, as you know, myopically focused this past weekend on producing and coordinating a concert at VCA, and then the next day doing a Q&A together with Benjamin Hunter from Folklife, artistic director of Folklife. It's just been a very, very full weekend and just very productive and very, it's a corny word, rewarding weekend. Just that concert was very, you were there, Craig. Mm-hmm. It was just an unusually special event was what I found, with a full house of people, standing room only, and a gracious and generous audience, which turned on these seven entities that were performing, who then turned on the audience no further. And it became a love fest, as far as I could see. And dancing afterwards, I just saw smiles and lots of people emailing me and just saying, I sat down in my seat, and from the first remarks that were made, by Allison, I had a smile on my face, and it just kept getting broader and broader. And to me, that's great success. You know, I didn't see it as a folk music and a folk dance. It was a community building event, is basically what it was, and it succeeded. And I'm really pleased by it.
As you should be. When I discuss what I did this last week, it's almost all Martin Koenig. Saturday, that Balkan dance concert presentation that you produced and brought these various groups in from several of the Balkan countries was truly remarkable. I think, like you said the other day, the dancers felt like they'd almost danced their best because of the way the audience gave them feedback. And being partially the child of Balkan ancestors, Croatians, some of that music just hits me right in the gut, and really, really remarkable. And we were going to be talking about that in more detail in a moment. And then I went to the Q&A that you had with Ben Hunter. Ben Hunter, the artistic director of Northwest Folklife, who was a guest of ours on the Brown Briefly here when he first took that job, or early on when he took that job. That was great. But the actual photographs that you have throughout the atrium and in the lobby area and in the gallery and whatnot are amazing. I mean, they are amazing. I think I told you, Martin, at one point I looked at one of these photographs of this threesome of a husband, a wife, and a fairly adult daughter. And I think the wife, they were sitting in front of a little table that had some things on it. And the gentleman's watch, because he was holding a tamborita, I think, was on his wife's wrist. Because they were showing off the few possessions that they had, and he had the most glorious grin on his face. He was so happy, and I thought, that's a lesson right there. These people have virtually nothing. They've just immigrated to the United States, and they are so proud and so happy. And it actually made me cry. It was something else, I have to say.
They have hope.
What's that?
They had hope.
Yes.
They had hope.
They did. I ran out of there and I ran over to church. And like Truman, caught the whole routine that we've got over at O Space. And I agree with you 100% to the Hotchkiss with the, he was the former head of the band Train and is an Emmy Award winner. Remarkable band with Diane Krause on saxophone. My gosh.
By the way, I just have to point out, we just had some visitors walk by and with a whole bunch of little kids, and one of the little kids was the daughter of one of our producers.
Fantastic.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Little preschoolers?
So, yeah, those aren't the honeybees, are they?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Because the honeybees I have on my other show all the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's move along here real quickly. This is October 14th. It's a significant day, like all days in history. It is 17 days until Halloween, getting really close. 72 days until Christmas. Count those numbers down. And most importantly, 385 days until the midterm elections on November 3rd of 2026.
Can't come soon enough.
Yeah. Scary.
This is National Dessert Day, not National Desert Day.
Two S's because you always want more.
I know.
Because you always want more.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
This is the
that's
only
a good way to remember.
Remember it.
That's right. All right. This is Be Bald and Be Free Day. Nobody here. Nobody here.
Protein baldness. But that's...
Real Sugar Day as opposed to fake sugar. I'm a big fan of real sugar. And Face Your Fears Day. Which is always good, and
unless you have a lot of sugar, you'll be
that's right. You'll have even more fears if you eat nothing but artificials.
Yeah. You know, putting the fears and the Halloween together, one of the paper mache masks is the Stephen Miller mask. And it's scary even in real life, but in mask form, it's still scary. So, but they're prepping, you know.
They're making a Stephen Miller
paper mache.
That's got to be awesome.
That's
got to
be a horror.
So, yeah. I mean, I only mention that because it is, you know, Halloween's coming up.
That's right. Very appropriate. You did tie those all together. This is in history. In 1892, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Arthur Conan Doyle is published.
And just to be clear, didn't it come out in like a magazine first? I think there were several episodes.
As a serial?
Yeah, I think it was.
That sounds about right.
And then they consolidated them into a book, I believe.
Whatever, so
this
you
may
say.
Have been. Yeah, no. So
just say it with confidence.
No, I'm pretty sure that's true.
And I think it is.
I'll probably be getting a text from my wife saying, yeah, that was it or something.
Hopefully it'll be, that.
Yeah, exactly.
In 1912, on this day, former President Theodore Roosevelt is shot in Milwaukee while giving a speech and continues on with his speech. Tough dude.
Yeah. Was he the one who was wearing, he had basically a book, a little pocketbook in his chest pocket, and it slowed the bullet?
Is that one of those things that's been recreated in a million different little movies and serial things?
I don't know. I can't remember. I know one of the presidents, and I think it was, I think it was him.
It might have been.
Yeah, he had, and I know there was somebody who had, like, his speech was so thick and was folded up, but I think he had, like, a little pocketbook. I can't remember what it was, but it actually slowed the bullet.
Oh, it burnished his Rough Rider credentials for
absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, you know, and he got up with that maxi pad right there, and, you know, all of his followers from then on had him taped to their chest. It's quite an inspiring story. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's also proof that Milwaukee's been a tough town for a long time.
Long time.
My birthplace. Yay, Milwaukee. In 1922, the first Tom McCann shoe store opens in New York City on 3rd Avenue. I only mention that because that was one of my very first jobs. Was selling shoes at Tom McCann's. That's where I started.
It was lady shoes at Tom McCann's.
All kinds of shoes at Tom McCann's.
Right? Kids.
Okay, I graduated to high fashion lady shoes later at 10 times the price.
There's some credentials
and considerably smaller than they should have had on their feet.
Okay.
What?
You have some credentials then to graduate.
Oh, you do. You have to work your way up.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, not messing around.
In 1947, Chuck Yeager makes his first supersonic flight in the Bell XS-1 at just over the speed of sound, 1.06 Mach.
First sonic boom then.
Yeah.
They thought he'd blown up. They didn't know.
They thought that people might blow up if they went beyond the speed of sound. Yeah. 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis begins as U.S. biplanes photograph Soviet missiles in Cuba. Yes, sir.
And I have a claim to fame there.
Responsible for
no. Cuban? Yeah. Oh. No. One of our sergeants, when I was in Europe, was actually... had been relegated to a basement in Washington, D.C. for some activities that occurred over in Eastern Germany, or East Germany at the time. But he was one of the guys who discovered those missiles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of cool.
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And finally, in 1964, an individual by the name of Martin Luther King was announced as the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize.
And I'm glad the commission is holding up its high standards to this day.
Right, of integrity and courage, as they say. That's
sometimes.
Sometimes. That's right.
I mean,
I just think of the most recent, you know, decision.
There's some troublesome. But indeed, they are. Well, I don't know. Every once in a while, I'm like, what are you guys doing over there?
Okay. All right. Yeah, I looked it up, Amy. You got me curious. Roosevelt was shot by John Schrank. He was a former saloon keeper, and this was when Roosevelt was campaigning for the presidency in Milwaukee, and the bullet lodged in Roosevelt's chest after penetrating his steel glasses case and passing through a 50-page thick single-folded copy of his speech titled Progressive Cause Greater Than Any Individual. So there you go.
You get total credit for that, Amy.
Right on. Get that historical trivia going.
Oh, boy, I tell you, that's great. Bruce Holman, who's not with us today, unfortunately, would be very proud of you.
Indeed.
That's
right. All right, let's turn to our small talk guests, Martin Koenig. And we welcome you, Martin, to the Brown Briefly show.
Thank you.
I did want to just ask you to sort of lay the groundwork of your background. And before we get into your remarkable career as an historical documentarian, please tell us a little about where you and your family are from, where you've lived, and how and when you ended up on Vashon.
Well, my parents come from villages in, at that time, was Poland, and these days is Ukraine, south of Lviv, just north of Romania. And my mother came here in 1920. My father came here in 1929, and my mother brought him over. They married in Europe. And I was born in 1938, and I was born in the Bronx, New York. And I lived in the Bronx, and then I lived in Flatbush, Brooklyn, and then I moved up to Manhattan.
You carry a little of that Brooklyn and Brooklyn dialect with you there.
I never noticed that.
I never threw it away.
Very charming.
I didn't try. I have some pride with it. I'm not a co-housing founder, though I joined co-housing at the very outset. The founders were really Evan Simmons and Mark Music. But I joined, I think I came to the, my wife, very pregnant wife, and I came to the second meeting of co-housing at the senior center, because we had heard at a Christmas dinner with friends in Wallingford that there were two groups forming here on Vashon, and we came over to see. One was a group of farmers, and another was a group of, as described to us, latte drinkers. And my wife identified with the farmers, and she's still out there farming on shoulder-to-shoulder farm on Vashon Households.
Yeah.
Community Land Trust.
Yeah, that's one of our properties. And yeah, we have five of the original plots there at co-housing.
Yes. Yeah. And that, I was the one that negotiated that with Jean Bosch.
Excellent.
Actually, she wanted to take them all.
Of course.
Jean, girl.
Jean, you get it, Jean.
I understand it and I admire it, but take five and let's be happy with it. So, and Jean was very instrumental at the very outset of, just as a side, in forming the bylaws for co-housing and putting together, which we worked on for weeks and weeks and weeks, the condo decks for to bring to a law firm, because it was a form that was totally new to Washington State and to the country. Co-housing, and nobody really knew what to do with it. And that went, but I did all the negotiating with the county, with DDES, and arm wrestling with them. And once again, everyone was concerned because they had never done this before, and it's like taking a square peg, putting it into a round hole, and it's not fitting, and what do we do, and is it going to come back and bite me in the end? And just people were very concerned and didn't know what to do, and little by little, they felt more and more comfortable with it. But originally, that plot had permits for 59 houses.
Wow.
Wow.
And when I told them we only wanted 18, the technician at DDS says, no, 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 Martin, you don't understand. You can get 59. And I said, no. We really do understand, but all we want is 18. No. You don't. It was a very interesting experience.
You know, need to throw out, you know, that Jean Bosch had a degree in anthropology, which I think is really fascinating.
Because her father was an anthropologist. Taught up in Bellingham.
I think they're down in Arizona for quite some time, I believe, also. Or New Mexico, somewhere in the Southwest.
So I came here in 1989, because I had heard that there was a co-housing group. And I had been here a week before with John and Carolyn Candy at a solstice celebration, and then we came back a week later to this meeting at the Senior Center, went to the Washington and Oregon coast for a week, and came back early Sunday morning of the day of New Year's Eve, and second meeting of the group, and we said, well, can we join? And they say, as long as you're not from California, we have no problem with your joining.
With that, New York. I can't believe it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, they didn't have any problems with New Yorkers. Just California. Yeah. Not from California. You're fine. Mm-hmm.
So funny.
We joined. Mm-hmm. And then every Tuesday night, we would get a phone call from Mark and telling me what was happening, because we went back to New York. And we stayed there for 5 years before we were able to extricate ourselves from our lives there and moved out here in 1994. And that's when I first met Truman. I used to go to the Park District meetings I had three small children, and I would get out early evening, and I loved those meetings, Truman.
Thanks.
That they were, you had a very nice group of commissioners.
You know, we did have Emma, that was what I was speaking of earlier. Emma Amiad was one, and she was kind of my inspiration for that endeavor. It was really amazing.
Mm-hmm. But Jake was also there. Jake Jacobovich.
Yeah, he and I were the two. He and I were the two newbies, as it were. But we were newbies for 8 years, I think. So
I remember I'd walk into Emma's real estate office after I realized the alignment of values that we had, and she would always say, "What can I do for you today, young man?"
Yeah.
She's always so polite.
Yeah. Kevin, you have a couple questions, I think.
Well, Martin, we want to make sure to point out to our listeners that you have a month-long photographic exhibit, The Balkan Echoes, now at Vashon Center for the Arts, running through November 2nd, which is the key rationale, right, for having you join us.
That is correct.
Share with our listeners something about that. But please let us know about the exhibit, the Balkan dancers and the musicians, and basically how things went at VCA this last Saturday and what people can expect going forward now.
Well, you know, as I said before, it was totally remarkable. And, you know, every time anyone who produces an event, and I think that all of you here have produced events, is, even though I don't know it, I assume that. Yep. They're all different, and some are more successful than others, just the way it goes. And this was a 10 off the chart. It was just the performers went home on the ferry, the 11 o'clock ferry, and I get an email that says, four of the seven groups were dancing all around the ferry.
Oh, really?
Singing a cappella songs that they all had a shared knowledge of this repertoire. So they just couldn't stop themselves. They were just so from what happened there.
If I could interject, Kevin, just for a second, can you list the Balkan countries?
Sure. So I should say that when I was invited to do the photography exhibition, I thought it would be relevant to do a concert. So I volunteered. I was a volunteer curator without being hired. Just I said, look, I'll do this for you. I will produce and coordinate. I'll contact the artists. I'll make the selection. I'll do everything. And I was able to get two Croatian groups. So you have Croatia. I had a group of female singers that sang songs from Herzegovina and from Serbia and from North Macedonia and from Croatia and from Bulgaria. I had a Bulgarian dance group with a band that turned out to be a four-piece fabulous band. And one of the band members was a person working in tech. All these are Bulgarian Americans. And he makes a good salary, and he brought in a guy from Chicago to play bagpipe, and he brought in a guy who was visiting playing gadulka, upright stringed instrument, and they really made fabulous music. So you have Bulgaria, you have Croatia. The Radost Ensemble danced men's and women's dances from Romania. And then I think that was it.
Yeah, I think that was the countries
and
that
Croatia was the other one from Anacortes, Veluka from Anacortes.
Right, and just so people know, the other countries that are included in the Balkan countries are what Albania.
You have Greece.
Right.
You have Europeans part of Turkey, Slovenia.
Montenegro.
Not a boy, Craig. I'm impressed. Anyway, so they invited me to do this exhibition, and I didn't want it to just be a little exotica of my photographs from 50 years ago. Isn't this charming? Isn't this cute? Now, in the subsequent years, what was on the wall is no longer there, as in so many places all over the world, and I'm sure we've all experienced, whether it's Southeast Asia or wherever you've gone, it's just the whole world has been so transformed and globalized that it is very, very difficult to find a place that's local, that has local, yeah.
So in this event on Saturday, you know, you had on the walls the historic photographs.
Correct.
And the current cultural representation, if you will.
That is correct.
And
that was the intention.
Mm-hmm. So
this is not a cutesy little exotic exhibition. This is your neighbors. There were some musicians from the Jovanovich family from Vashon Island. Tim, the father, and Dominic, the son, and Tim's brother George from West Seattle, and George's son Mark, and various other musicians playing. And then it went to people in King County, and then it went to the East Side, Microsoft engineers that are out here playing and dancing, and then it went up to Anacortes, that we had people coming down, and it was remarkable because it was a sampler concert that a group could perform as little as 4 minutes or as much as 15 minutes. Bosnia is the other one.
You know, there's so much to be said nowadays about the indomitable spirit of culture and people's beliefs and systems that bring people together. So, yeah, you're painting that picture for me now. Thank you.
And that's exactly, that's part of what happened there. I mean, when I worked in New York, I did this work. I would produce concerts, and that was part of my CV.
Right.
And the most successful event you can get from my type of work, which would be ethnic music, immigrant ethnic music, was you get enough people from the ethnic community to be with a general public audience and party together. And the place takes off, and that's what we had. You just had so many people from the ethnic communities themselves here, and then general public, and just everybody was just feeding each other.
Before I turn the questioning over, Amy has a couple of questions. The photographs that are throughout the gallery, they were photographs, and they represent all of the countries that you just mentioned, I think. They were taken during what period of time?
They were taken from 1962 to 1987.
Okay, 1962 to 1987.
That was early. I started going there in 1959, but I had a little Olympus
camera.
It wasn't
right.
a very fancy camera, but I loved the photographs I took, and then I invested in Pentax and Nikons, and that's where most of the photographs were taken, but 62 to 87.
Okay. Amy?
Yeah, well, and really cultural recording, I mean, that part of our world is so hotly contested, right? And it is changing all the time and being destroyed and recreated and redrawn all of the time. So, you know, and especially kind of during those years, what an amazing time to go to the Balkans, right? And sort of capture what was going on there. So how did you get involved in, you know, sort of cultural archiving, right? Like, what took you to the Balkans, and you know, what were your influences and your inspirations?
What took me there, first, I was a 20-year-old graduating from Brooklyn College in the City University system in New York, and I was a history major. And at some point I got introduced to folk dancing, and I absolutely loved it. And I was good at it, so that's one thing that helped me love it.
It helps, yeah.
But I love the communality of it. You're always joined hands. You're touching someone. You're in touch with a group of people moving in synchrony together. Mm-hmm. And that's a good society. If you get a group of people that can move in synchrony for a good purpose, you've got a winner. So that's what got me engaged in the folklore and the music and the dance of this area. But I went to Europe in 1959, the first time. I took a boat, a slow-going boat. I had never taken a plane before in my life. And I visited Western Europe, and at the same time, a friend of mine had a car, and we drove down to the former Yugoslavia. And it was just a revelation. I had never seen... Number one, Western Europe was a revelation. It was just 14 years after the war. The war, the damage was everywhere, just everywhere you looked. And particularly the roads, and this made such a deep impression on me, all the roads in every country were being rebuilt. Mm-hmm. And it could be rebuilt by Bulgarians, hundreds of them along the road, just chipping away at little cobblestones to put in there. Or it could be the Yugoslavs with beautiful asphalt roads that you drive down. If you ever go to Dubrovnik and drive along the Dalmatian coast, it's just a remarkable, remarkable highway. And you'd see the work crews that did it, and many of these governments were communist or socialist. And they had these young people that were elegant, handsome men, handsome women, singing songs and building roads. It was just unbelievable. Now, there are other things involved, but we won't go into those.
Yeah, wow.
But so that made a huge impression upon me. And then I came home, and I started teaching history in a high school in Lower Manhattan. And I had a folk dance group. And at some point, after 5 years, I couldn't do it anymore. And it was just... to teach is... I give medals to a teacher. That really is something...
You know, I was stationed in Europe when I was in the Army in 67 through 69, I think it was. And let's see, 67, the very end of 67 and then the middle of 69. And one of the things that fascinated me was in Frankfurt, the Opera House was still bombed out. And they had big fencing all around it, and the building was bombed out. I mean, it was still standing, but it was in terrible shape. And several years, many years later, my wife and daughter and I stopped in Frankfurt coming back from Spain. And we were there just overnight. And I said, oh, you have to go down and see the bombed out remains of the Opera House. And when we got there, of course, it had been completely restored and was absolutely gorgeous. And I was just gobsmacked, as they say, to see this beautiful building when I had seen it bombed out before. So I find that really interesting.
To finish answering your question, though, between 1966, when I left teaching in the high school, I started teaching as an adjunct at Barnard College and Sarah Lawrence College. Uh-huh. I started teaching folk dance.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I decided that if I'm going to teach folk dancing, I should really go to the source. Where these folk dances come from, instead of learning it from someone who taught it from someone, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I went to Bulgaria and the former Yugoslavia in 1966. And between 66 and 70, I took 5 different trips, teaching for 5 months and then going there for 7 months. And originally to learn dances. But Alan Lomax had seen one of my, at that point, the first time I had an ensemble that was dancing, and it came to one of my performances at Cooper Union in New York.
And Alan Lomax is?
I think we all know.
Well, some of the listeners may not know.
Well, Alan Lomax probably is the giant of giant folklorist who's not a degreed person but has the best ears of anyone in terms of root forms of folk music, and has worked with, was the first one to work with blues, the first one to work with Cajun music, the first one to work with Appalachian music. He just had, as I say, phenomenal ears. And he also was a tank. He moved forward and was a librarian at the Library of Congress, and really made his mark, I think, in the country and in the world, legitimizing this music form and bringing it forward to people like myself. And less so in terms of Balkan, but I got revealed to Appalachian music and black cultural forms through him. But in going to, in 66 to 70, I did this field research, and he introduced me to Margaret Mead. And both he and Margaret Mead invested money in me. And Margaret was a supporter for me over a seven-year period. Every year she would fund me. And every year I would come to her and tell her what I was going to do when I take the next trip. And then I'd have to come back to her. She was in a little turret up on the top floor of the Museum of Natural History in New York. A charming turret with windows. and then I'd have to report to her what I did. And I had 15 minutes. And when the 15 minutes were up, a student would come in and say, with a little bell, and say, time to go.
Next.
she was remarkable. And the only responsibility, she would ask me periodically to accompany her to, she was the director of a foundation that she had set up, the Institute for Intercultural Studies. And she would give lectures, and the fees that she would collect from lectures would go to people like myself and others who were doing work around. And somehow she had a sense that I would be a good collector. And in the end, it paid off, but I never quite understood, well, gee, I don't have a degree in anthropology. I don't have, you know, why is she, but she bet on my horse.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you were planning to go to Southeastern Europe to learn folk dancing.
Correct.
But with her encouragement, you ended up collecting.
She turned my head
archiving.
180 degrees around, and I became obsessed with, I never had any insight until she would say, get everything on film, get everything on tape, get everything on camera, on, it's going to be gone tomorrow. And it happened.
Right.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's you go there now, everyone's dressed in Adidas and Nikes, and what you're wearing, that's what they're wearing.
Yeah.
Your tattoo is their tattoo.
Yeah.
I mean, it's homogenized society, globalized culture, and the villages are empty. It's really very sad, actually.
When did you sort of start seeing it? Was it sort of after the breakup or of the former Soviet Union when, you know, like things sort of became de-Balkanized? Or when did you really start to see that creep in?
I saw it in 1970, which was when it was still under their local rule. But it started out where people could were no longer, they were getting exposed to a lifestyle and a way of living that was not as brutal as working 14-hour days on the land. And so people were leaving the land, leaving the farms to come into the city. It's a, how are you going to keep them down the farm after yeah. they've seen Paris? But it's that sort of thing. And then when the wall came down and just everybody fled, mm-hmm. they fled to the West. They fled to Australia. They fled to New Zealand. They fled to America, North America, South America. Young women were not going to stay in the village. If young women aren't going to be there, young men aren't going to be there. mm-hmm. So they all just took off.
You know, I mentioned that I was there from 66 or 67 to 69. At that time, I was in the military, mm-hmm. and because of my job, we were not allowed within 5 clicks of the eastern border. Sure. So we were not allowed to experience any of that, yeah. which I find really fascinating that you were there. And I was looking over the fence, literally at one point, looking over the fence.
Well, the fascinating thing, if I can just throw this out, was... each year I would buy, number one, I didn't come with money. So that was really a struggle. How you got this mission to do something. And I bought the equipment to do it. And it was still affordable. I couldn't do 35 millimeter, but it wasn't necessary. It was affordable. I could buy a Bolex 16 millimeter camera. I couldn't have the money to buy an Arriflex. So it wasn't the best, but it was a good professional camera with a motor, 400-foot cassettes, and still cameras, and have the same tape recorder that would be used in Hollywood, the Nagra. And I would enter these countries that were very claustrophobically... myopic and fearful of the West, that they're going to spy on us. And here I had all the equipment. And they let me. Mm-hmm. And they were, I must say, they were fabulous.
Yeah, that's Every fascinating.
Toomey, do you have some follow-up questions about the photography aspects?
Well, you know, obviously you were all doing everything in film. And now you're saying primarily 16 millimeter, which yeah. I find fascinating because... You know, that was replaced by the Super 8, which yes. is terrible by comparison. Yes. The 16 millimeters, yes. fabulous. So what happened to all of that? What happened to all that footage? And that's the first question. The second question is, have you gone to the dark side and gone to digital now, or are you still wanting to use film?
Well, I'm 87, so I don't have the hunger yeah. to do what I did before. And the world that I documented... It's not there anymore, yeah. and it's
But
a
you're
different...
still a hell of a dancer.
Yeah, I can still.
You demonstrated that the other night.
My legs are still able to move adequately. Thank you, Craig. Well, you know, the Library of Congress has an archive. Mm-hmm. The Smithsonian has an archive. So I worked for the Smithsonian for several years for the Festival of American Folklife. And then when the pandemic hit, although the Library of Congress was calling me, every year I get a call, hey, give us your material, bring us your material, transfer it over to us. And I said, look, I can't talk to you now because I'm doing these presentations. At that point, I was working with the Smithsonian and issuing recordings. And the only way recordings would get off the shelf would be if you went to the Bulgarian American Society in New York, or the one in Aliquippa, or the one in Chicago, and travel to these places and give a presentation, because I was a person that had some real knowledge in a place that most of these people had never experienced because they were younger and they had left since 89 to come here. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is because of I had done the recording of Valya Balkanska, which went on the Voyager spacecraft. So that made me very famous in terms of the Bulgarian community. But when the pandemic hit, I was sitting in my house
doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I spoke to them, and I agreed to transfer my entire collection right. to the Library of Congress, which I spent the next 5 years in my obsessive fashion, which is why you haven't seen me on the street yeah. or in any meetings recently in the last few years, because I was documenting everything because nobody else would be able to document it. It's this little village at the top of this mountain. If it's not identified who they are, what they're doing, it's not going to be identified. No. So all of it, you're talking about 40,000 feet of 16-millimeter film wow. with sync sound. Wow. And I'm in process now of syncing sound.
Oh, my gosh.
And then about you, you asked me, somebody asked, how much...
How many feet?
How many photographs? So I tried to figure it out, Truman.
Yeah.
40,000 black and white negatives.
Wow.
A little less than that, color slides.
Oh.
And then 40,000 feet of 16 millimeter and about over 200 7-inch reels.
Wow.
Of music.
Right. Wow.
And as I say, all of it is gone at this point, and Mead was absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, Martin, unfortunately, we only have a few minutes left. But I did want to ask you, do you think that these photographs that you've taken are more than a look back at vanishing culture? Do they have some modern relevance in today's political situation, the way that we look at immigrants, for example?
Well, you know.
that's your 3 minutes, two minutes.
I got 2
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know what this signal was.
Sorry.
I thought you were saying everything was okay.
No, 2 minutes.
To begin with, I think I made it very clear at the beginning of the concert that this was not a world music event. This was an immigrant music event. And whether you came in whether your families came in 1825, 1925, or 2025, and whether you came from Southeast Asia, or Southeast Europe, or Southeast Africa, or South America, or Southeast Europe, as the concert was, you're all the same. You come with nothing or very little, and what you come with are your songs, your dances, your music. That exhibit of mine, which I love, I think it's wonderful, is anyone can relate to it. It's not, you don't have to come from the Balkans, and I think some people didn't come to the concert because they thought it was Balkan, and it's not Balkan specific. It's universal.
Martin Koenig, I have to thank you. You are an island treasure. I'm glad you've come out of hibernation. From doing all that archiving and sharing these with us today and at the VCA. I encourage everyone, it's going to be there through November 2nd, I think it is.
Yes,
And it's just a wonderful
There's
photographic.
There's a walkthrough on November 2nd, Sunday, November 2nd.
Right, right. Kevin, do you know what we're having next week?
We are working on a guest for next week, and we shall see what happens. The folks are quite busy who I'm talking to, but the
what
organizers,
a teaser.
The
what a teaser.
Yeah. Edge of my seat.
And I will be absent.
Oh.
So you're going to be the...
I'll be running the board.
Okay. We'll see if we can get on the
air.
Hopefully the organizers of the No Kings 2 will be joining us to tell us how it went and what we have in mind for next time.
That'd be great. That'd be great. And a reminder that on Friday, this Friday the 17th, the Voice of Vashon will be celebrating 26 years of community radio on Vashon at the Vashon Center for the Arts, the very place we were just talking to, for the Voice competition. Your fellow Islanders will be competing in various categories. Doors open at 6:30. The show starts at 7. You can go online on the Voice of Vashon or VCA, and tickets are free, but we do like to and appreciate any contributions. So for Martin Koenig, Amy, Kevin, Bruce, who's not with us today, Truman, and myself, thank you for joining the Brown Briefly. Until the Brieflies return next Tuesday morning at 11, please enjoy this beautiful autumn in the Northwest.